TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo.
Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. I said, ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Gorilla tactics. Whoa.
As we were brought in by the fire zones of the targets, with whom we give our respect and our deference to, I'd like to thank you and welcome you to listening to The Outsider's Edge. It's your boy, Rance, aka Ray Cash, and it's been a while since we gave you something to, not step two, we're not rappers, but you know what I mean, we gave you something to listen to, but we're back. We're going to get back consistent eventually, but you know it's the summertime. We're cooking, out here barbecuing, playing with the kids in the park, swimming and stuff. So we're going to get back eventually, consistently. But it's a lot to talk about. A lot's been going on, especially since you last heard from us. So before we dive into it, let me introduce my esteemed brethren, the Coda to my Kenny, and we'll be talking a lot about Coda tonight. Mr. Kyle Morris, what's happening, brother? How you doing?
We damn sure will be talking a lot about Coda tonight, but not right this second. Life is good. Shout out also, before we get started, as ever, to our missing brother in arms, Mr. Carl Irvin, on the press junket for his highly successful and renowned column. I heard that this week Carl is currently in Estonia. He's working his way through the former Soviet states. And Nostrovia, brother Carl, we love you. But tonight we got a lot to talk about, and I really look forward to that. We've also got some great content that they need to be on the lookout for. You and I, Rance, had an excellent discussion not too long ago.
Yes.
The wild card rule. And
yes,
the issues that the wild card rule is creating throughout the product.
Yes.
Listeners, be on the lookout for that. We're having some technical difficulties with the editing of the audio.
The computers file. Don't like me.
I mean, the computers are a little bit racist. We're trying to send the computers to a diversity program and hope that they might change their ways.
Sensitivity class, Dr. Yeah, Shelby.
We're going to give them some sensitivity training. But the point is, listeners, be on the lookout for a bonus edition of The Edge. It's going to come at you when you least expect it. And we're going to talk about how the wild card rule was a good idea in theory, terrible idea in execution.
You might even get that probably around the – I'll probably drop that around the beginning of July. Give you something a little special. My birthday, me and Carl's birthday is actually in the beginning of July, so we might give it to you.
And my birthday's in the middle of August, so like,
so we're right there.
Important birthday time for The Edge.
So we got a lot of fun things to talk about, a lot of cool things to talk about, a lot of controversial things to talk about, but I would be remiss if I didn't start the show off by sending a good rest in peace and rest in power to Lionheart. It's never fun seeing somebody pass. Someone so young and someone so powerful. The dude was literally I'm not going to call him the king, but he was essentially the top guy of the British wrestling scene. And was loved by so many. I mean, so many people are coming out saying how much he meant to them or how he impacted their lives. And I was on with Mucha last night on Ricky and Clive with Ricky. And Rick said something that I kind of want to echo. I don't want to get into the possibility of what happened because we don't know, and his family deserves their privacy. So, you know, I think a lot of us can kind of deduce and take ideas of what happened, but it's not for me to say until it's publicly announced by his family. But nonetheless, I wish the best. I wish the family the best. I hope that, you know, those who knew him
those who are fans of his will have some closure and some love and some comfort during this time. And ICW, man, you got a hole. Because not only was he the champ, but he was like the pillar of that company. So before we get any further, man, we want to give some love to Lionheart,
and wrestling also,
fans, and all of that.
And also, I'd be remiss, you know, if I didn't also take this opportunity to plug, like, y'all, mental health counseling is never a bad idea. It doesn't have to be a crisis situation. It can just be you need somebody to talk to and you don't have anybody immediately around you to do so. It is always okay to go to therapy. It is always okay to seek someone out to talk to if you feel lost or you feel overwhelmed. That doesn't make you less of a person. Mental health. Take care of your mental health.
As somebody who deals with anxiety and depression himself, like this man that who's sitting right across from me, not literally, but you know, on the computer, along with Carl and Ricky and Clive and Rob and so many other people, they keep me in. They keep me grounded. And I can't tell you how many times they've had to talk me off the ledge and doing something stupid or losing my mind. So it's never too late. Always reach out. There's always somebody there. By the way, to segue, is this our first episode we're going to release during Pride Month?
Probably. Happy Pride Month, y'all. Stay fabulous.
Happy Pride. Yes, happy Pride.
Stay fabulous. But, you know, Pride Month for a lot of people is a birth in a lot of ways because, you know, you're being born as your true self. We talked a little bit earlier about birthdays coming up. There's a birthday of sorts on Sunday, a first birthday, if you will. The WWE is going to be putting on their first ever Stomping Grounds pay-per-view. I don't know quite how I feel about that name, but, you know.
Hey, Kyle, get some icy hot for that reach you just made. Okay. That was a hell of a reach.
You know, man.
It'll work.
Well, I can't journalism right away this early. First show in weeks.
Oh, all right. Boy,
gonna take a minute to journalism.
I'm telling you, man, that was.
You
that
started
was
off.
The books.
Dude, you started off too heavy. How am I supposed to segue from something that heavy to something so lighthearted and silly? Because, I
Fair
mean,
enough.
Stomping Grounds is kind of a silly name. And the Timberland work boot logo is.
Nope.
I'm not feeling it.
No, those are Birdman's lugs.
Cars oh, you're right.
Real big. House real big. Everybody
now
real
that I'm
big.
Looking at them, holy shit, you're right. Those are lugs. Fuck me.
I'll tell you this, though.
90s on this shit, then.
100%. I'll tell you this, though. The same time last year, we laughed at Great Balls of Fire, and that ended up being one of the better shows of the year. And I feel like this is going to be lowly watched. Very few people will watch this show. But from a content standpoint, I bet you it's going to deliver.
I mean, looking at the card, it looks like it has a lot of matches that could absolutely be really, really good. But I do definitely agree, just with this time of year especially and everything that'll be going on, I can definitely see this not being a most watched show.
Oh, God, no. No.
And especially because, like, some of the storylines... some storylines are strong, some not so much.
So this is one of the negatives of not only the multiple pay-per-view system that they have, but the Saudi Arabia shows. Because this is essentially the top four matches on the card are rehashes of the Gem in the Sand or the Greatest World, whatever it's called. The
Blood Money.
Super Showdown. Blood Money. Yes. Rollins and Corbin is a rematch. Kofi and Ziggler is a rematch, although it has a stip now. And Rollins and Corbin has a stip too. Becky and Lacey wasn't on Blood Money, but it was on the show before that. Mm-hmm. That's a rematch. And then
Alexa
Roman and Drew.
Bailey, they started building around the time of Blood Money.
And Roman and Drew is in a rematch, but Roman and Drew is just the next iteration of Roman and Shane. So, you know, and so that's this. It's not this. I think we all can agree. Even if you, and I know you, like, aren't interested in people like Rollins and Corbin, per se. But the matches will be fine. But it's the fact that we're rehashing things over and over again.
Well,
nobody
and
would
want to
pay for this.
Well, and what's making that worse, I know we were just talking about how we're going to post our discussion on the wild card rule.
Yes.
Sometime in the near future. But as kind of a preview of what we our thoughts on that were, this is part of the issue with the wild card rule, because if I'm looking at the people involved in these matches, these are the same people that are on both Raw and SmackDown every week.
That's why they're on the pay-per-view, though.
That is why they're on the pay-per-view. You're right. Yeah. I'm not saying that's not why they're on the pay-per-view.
But that's a problem.
But it's a problem because it means for the last 6 weeks, you're talking 12 shows plus blood money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 13 shows. The last 13 shows, I've been watching these same 5 and 6, 7 stories.
Mm-hmm. So I will say, if we're gonna talk negative, we're going to talk positive, too. We're going to keep it real. Monday's Raw and SmackDown's and Tuesday SmackDown were excellent in terms of utilizing people who were normally not utilized.
Mm-hmm.
They were excellent.
I agree.
Gallows and Anderson had a big thing, and Heath Slater had a big thing, and the Revival.
Benjamin and the B Team had a big thing on SmackDown.
I'm telling you, Eric Young had a nice spot. Like EC3 had a huge spot, which was the best he's been utilized since he's been in the company. Talking NXT as well. Like,
him and Drake are having such a great bestie life partner weekend.
You think EC3 is a little jealous that Drake got married?
I think EC3 is incredibly jealous of Drake's new spouse. But I also think that Drake is coming home to EC3 at night, so it's okay.
Oh, well, I can see that. I would not be shocked. Me and you have talked about that before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But anyway, no, like, they did a good job this week of starting to branch out and incorporate some of these stories. But why don't we start with the top of the card, and we'll work our way
down there.
Yeah, okay. Let's start from the top down.
Okay, so we talking your championship or the Universal Championship first?
Oh, no, I mean top of the card, like, what's most likely to curtain jerk on
Okay.
So, like, let's start
you.
With 205 Live and then work our way to the main events.
Well. Give me the. Let's do the non-title matches first.
All right. So the non-title matches are, we got The New Day,
yes,
Big E and Xavier,
yes,
versus the original best friends.
You took
Kevin
it out of
Owens
my mouth.
And Sami Zayn.
Wow. Same brain. You took it right out of my mouth.
The original best friends, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, and a tag team match. Match would have been on Blood Money if it weren't for the fact that KSG does not KSA does not fucks with Sami Zayn.
Sami and KSA is on site, so like for his safety, he might not want to go.
Yeah, no. Like,
and because Kevin Owens is a real life homie, real bruh like that.
Yeah,
he ain't going.
Nope. And for those of you who live under a rock and, like, have no idea as to why, Sami Zayn is ethnically Syrian. He is Syrian-Canadian. His parents moved to Canada from Syria. So he is, like, first-generation Canadian. But in the eyes of the kingdom, he is a Syrian. He's very active in Syria with charity, and they don't fucks with that. So he's not allowed in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
They have said that. They have,
like,
said
period.
Sami can't come. Yeah.
Yeah. Not Vince saying that. That is
MBS.
Yeah, MBS was like, fuck nah, he can't come.
Yep. So yeah. That's
so they're gonna be on Stomping Grounds. Which makes sense if you've followed Kofi and his WWE title reign at all. Kevin and Sami have been a big part of that. There have been a lot of Kevin and Sami doing traditional Kevin and Sami shenanigans on Big E and Xavier. So, like, this makes sense. I'm going to pick the New Day to win this match.
Okay.
I don't think the New Day are going to have a happy ending on the evening, but I'll get to that in a little while.
Ooh. I like that. That's what we in the business call the tease, ladies and gentlemen. I want to say that I'm so happy for Ian Woods, even if it's just a bullshit throwaway tag match, because they have largely been forgotten to showcase Kofi. Mm-hmm. And while it's worth it because Kofi deserves where he's at, and he's been the best champion in that entire company, main roster company at least, it does hurt to not see Woods and E be featured. Woods has been the damsel in distress while E was getting healthy, and now E's barely even talking in their segments. So to see them get some level of some shine,
That's why I was so happy on Tuesday when they were announced as The New Day instead of Kofi Kingston with The New Day.
And to be fair, Kofi, that's not Kofi's doing. Kofi is very happily a part of the group. But I mean, hey man, shine, brother. Go get your shine. Don't dim your light for nobody else.
Nope.
With that being said, I'm going to have a theme of what I think is going to happen in the show, and it's heavy shenaniganry. So I believe that Owens and Zayn will be victorious in this match.
All right. Okay, so if we're doing non-title matches first, then the next non-title match, the only other non-title match on the entire card...
The Big Dog.
...is the Big Dog, Roman Reigns, versus my probably least favorite member of the main roster, Mr. Drew McIntyre.
Who has found his life partner. Yep. Drew and Shane should be together.
Who would have guessed that Drew McIntyre was secretly Test all along? Who would have guessed that he was Test in disguise?
They're the same size. They're literally the same size.
They look similar. If Drew wore pants and had platinum blonde hair, tell me you could tell them apart.
And that weird-ass cross with the sun and the moon.
The fancy cross that Test had. Yeah. Put that on his shoulder, dye his hair platinum blonde, and put him in a pair of pants.
So what you're telling me is Mrs. Martin just happened to go to Ayr, Scotland at one point and have her another baby.
That's what it looks like. But I'm seeing with my eyes. I seen it with my eyes.
You seen it? I will say this, though. While I'm sick and tired of seeing these guys wrestle or fight or be involved with each other, this has been a good use of time for Roman because it's given him something worthwhile to do. And if you watched Monday, how obnoxiously good the Revival, Drew and Shane looked together, they look like it reminds me so much of what the NWO used to look like, or the old
Horsemen. I'm gonna go back to the corporation because I've been telling you for a while that Shane is just Mr. McMahon now.
Yeah.
He's finally taken that over. If Drew McIntyre is secretly Test, the Revival are if the Mean Street Posse could wrestle.
Oh, can I say for you?
Yeah.
Hey man, your boy Dash was looking tight in the pants. I was thinking about you Monday.
Yo, Dash got them cakes, yo.
I was thinking about you.
But anyway, no, like they're if the Mean Street Posse could wrestle. Like
pretty much.
They fit Shane like they fit what Shane needs so well. What does Shane as a heel need? He needs a heavy and he needs stooges. Drew is a great heavy. The Revival are excellent stooges.
And both of those guys are great wrestlers, but needed a personality. And Shane gives them a meaning to have personalities.
And I like them better as the Stooges because unlike the original Stooges who were both in the twilight of their lives already by that point, so literally all you could do with Patterson and Briscoe was put them in really hilarious evening gown matches. The Revival are in the prime of their lives. They're in like peak physical condition. And like you said, they can wrestle.
Yeah.
So like, they can actually have matches and actually do shit and actually be muscle.
Well, you talk about Shane embracing himself as a new Vince. Shane can actually wrestle.
Yeah.
Vince can never wrestle. Now, actually wrestle, I know some people are going to say, you know, he can't. What I mean is he's trained enough to wrestle a consistently decent match, whereas Vince just had spots.
Well,
like Shane knows the process of a match in ring.
And even being probably by now approximately the same age that Vince was in...
That's a good point. Yeah,
Mr. 55, McMahon.
55,
yeah. Yeah, even being that same age range now, Shane has aged more gracefully than Vince. Shane only looks as old as he looks to us, because we've seen him on TV since he was 16. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the fact that we've seen him on TV since he was 16, for like 48, 49, 50 years old, wherever he's at in that age bracket, he looks great. Mm-hmm. I mean, that cocaine is keeping him real young.
That cocaine, well, I'm telling you, he has the... Pablo Escobar himself has got, he's got his line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to pick a winner. So,
I'm picking Drew.
I'm gonna pick Roman because I'm not gonna let him lose this many big matches in a row.
All right.
But that doesn't mean that he's gonna walk out of this match. But he'll win the match.
Mm-hmm. If he wins, it's solidly like the middle of the card. If he wins, like the big feel good moment in the middle of the show.
Absolutely. And look back in history. Drew never beats Roman.
If the match opens, Roman wins. If it's the hot opener, Roman's winning the match.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. The baby face is going to win the hot opener. So
yeah. If it's the... All right. So that's literally all of the non-title matches. So if we're going back... Now let's go to the title matches. We'll start with the Cruisers.
Yes.
So we got a triple threat match between Akira Tozawa, the champ, Tony Nese, and my boy, Mr. Drew Gulak.
Can I say something right now, please?
Yeah.
If my brother Carl was here, and I'd like to, you know, respect his honor and live vicariously through his honor, his first response would be... He would be snoring right now. I just want you
to know. But his boy Brad's in this match.
I don't give a shit.
His boy Brad Tozawa, because, you know...
Oh my God, that's a legendary Edge moment. It's a legendary Edge moment.
Unfortunately for him, I don't think his boy Brad Tozawa's got a shot. Brad Tozawa. I think Tony Nese is probably gonna retain because I don't watch 205, so I don't really know like if they're building anything. I know that in a perfect world for me, because he's the character I like the most, Drew Gulak would win, but I'm gonna pick Tony Nese.
Well, so to give you some backstory, Tony Nese has been begging Drake Maverick for a challenger, and Drake has been too busy with the 24/7 title.
Oh, so that's a good storyline. I like that.
Exactly. And so they had a fatal five-way or something, and both Tozawa and Gulak ended up pinning each other or something of the sort, which is why it's a triple threat match. But the real challenger should be, and eventually Chad will Gable. Be, Mike Kanellis.
Oh, okay.
Who's okay. Kind of taking over the brand as like the top heel.
I'm fine with it being Mike Kanellis. I was going to say Chad Gable because like Chad Gable needs, like, I don't care if it means he has to go to 205, anything to get that man some screen time.
Well, it looks like they're trying to do something with him and Apollo, but Chad Gable's only had one match on 205, so... He hasn't even established himself yet. So eventually, as he gets more established, he'd be perfect for that spot. So I want to pick Gulak, and I picked Gulak in the chair shot predictions, but it's probably going to be Tony Nese.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's probably Tony. All right, you want to do tag teams or mid-cards?
Oh, let's do tag teams.
All right, so the tag team championships from SmackDown, we have got Heavy Machinery, Otis and Tucker, versus the Planets. Tag team champions, Captain Planet and the Planeteer, D-Bry and Rowan.
You were a little disrespectful there. You didn't introduce the Heavy Machinery as the champions. They are the Yolo County Tag Team Champions. All respect to the Yolo County tag titles.
My bad. My bad, Otis. I love y'all. Don't hate on me, man. I love y'all.
They took the vaunted championship photo shoot and everything, man. Come on, man. They're champs.
I mean, I wanted them to be the Raw Tag Champs more so than I wanted them to be the SmackDown Tag Champs. I think they're going to be Tag Champs of something at some point this year.
Absolutely.
If for no other reason than because, like, more excuses for Otis to have a microphone. Oh, Tucky, yeah!
We're coming!
But I don't think it's going to be... this weekend. I think this weekend, Captain Planet and the Planeteers save SmackDown Live for another day.
Brian is on a quest, and he has been consistently one of the best parts of SmackDown. Him and Rowan are a revelation together.
I love them so much together.
Rowan just finds himself, just continues to find himself fitting with these random people you would never see him with. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that this is, I think that this is an unexpected but great route for Daniel, because he doesn't have to do as much heavy stuff because tag team matches are inherently shorter. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be the only person in the match. He can tag out, he can share spots, blah, blah, blah. And it allows him to do what he really excels at, which is be an amazing fucking character.
And don't forget, he's working heel, so he's working on top.
Yep, and he gets to spread shine, which he's great at doing and loves to do. He gets to spread that shine on down to other people. So, like, this is a great way to utilize somebody like Daniel Bryan, who you're always going to worry a little bit about his health.
Oh, my God, yes.
You're always going to have that teeny tiny, like, little voice in the back of your head saying, oh, don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt.
Well, remember, there was a reason he was gone for a month after WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, putting him in a tag team, letting him be do another kind of big little tag, which always works. As much as we shit on it, it always works. Something about a big hoss and a little guy balances each other perfectly. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think they're going to win.
Can I ask you a nerd question?
Absolutely.
Do you know where, like, the first major use of that trope came from?
The first major use of the big little tag team in wrestling?
In pop culture.
Pop culture. Hmm. Can I get a hint? Give me a medium.
It's a really popular book.
Really popular book. Calvin and Hobbes?
Of Mice and Men.
Ah, dang.
Lenny and Carl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. Sorry, that was the nerd in both of us talking. So
yeah. Hey, that's okay. That's okay. Speaking of people that nerds like, Ricochet is facing Samoa Joe for the U.S. title.
Superheroes are real.
Yeah.
That's a joke on his T-shirt if you haven't seen it.
I don't know. They'll probably let Ricochet win, but I want to pick Joe because I like Joe.
Joe needs a feud he can sink his teeth into. I'm still bummed and disappointed massively that Dominic can breathe right now. Like, he should have had the life choked out of him.
Yep.
I'm so hurt.
Like, yep. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This is becoming a trope with Joe, because Joe is so gifted on the mic that you, like, expect badassery from him. And then when the badassery doesn't come, you're just like, this motherfucker lied to me.
Did you see his tweet about Father's Day?
Yes.
He said, I want to thank all the people that I've sunned over the years for wishing me a happy Father's Day. It was so good. Talk about it either way you can go. Ricochet is probably going to win the match, but probably by disqualification. I don't see Joe dropping the title this quick, but Joe is the king of dropping the title out of nowhere. So I do not know. Fuck it, Ricochet. He got a T-shirt. Give him the title. Why not?
Yeah, he is real popular. He's real popular. All right, Intercontinental title's not on the line. Raw tag team titles aren't on the line. So let's go to women. I'm going to start with the feud that has no life because these two have no chemistry. Bayley and Alexa Bliss for the SmackDown Women's Championship. They tried so hard on Tuesday.
It was really good to me.
They tried so hard, and, like, I could see flashes towards the end of, like, elements that might have made me care. But, like, I care so much more about Alexa and Nikki Cross than I do about Alexa and Bayley.
And that's Bayley's fault.
Bayley is not as good as champion as she is chasing. Because Absolutely. Once she's got the title, Bayley doesn't have the mic work necessary to make you want to sink your teeth into anything she's doing.
Absolutely. This isn't all my thoughts. I agree with them 100%, but I don't want to steal the idea. I heard this on Busted Open this morning, but he eloquated it exactly how I was thinking it. The beauty of that segment was, and Bully Ray said this, by the way, the beauty of that segment was that Alexa, it ended up being a back and forth promo battle, right? And Alexa essentially was saying so much quote unquote truth or things that would hurt, that was affecting Bayley so much that the face clocked the heel. So that means that apparently the face, that the heel said something that had to be true for the face to want to be the aggressor, because normally the face isn't the aggressor in that spot. And on top of that, the heel didn't go down. So it just made Bayley look like she was weak as hell. And ultimately, who was on the ass at the end of the segment? Bayley was. So I feel like Bayley needs some edge. And I know a lot of people said that about Rollins, and he seemed to have gotten some of that. But Bayley needs some edge. She can still be the hugger and all that stuff, but she needs some edge, and that's what's been killed. That's what's killed her since she's been on the main roster. And Alexa is going to murder you on the mic. That girl is in a class on her own in that division. And Bayley can't hang. But the beauty is, Nikki gonna turn on her eventually when she realizes how fraud Alexa is.
And now Nikki's not as good as Alexa on the mic because, like you just said, Alexa's in a class of her own. But Nikki is good on the mic. Nikki, yes. And Nikki understands her character and understands her motivation. So whereas Bayley, and I agree with you, I put a lot of the blame for this on Bayley. Bayley doesn't have mic chemistry with anybody because she doesn't have any kind of charisma in this character. And so, like I said, they tried really hard on Tuesday, and it was the closest they've come to getting me to care. But I found myself sitting there thinking, God, these two just don't work together. I need this to be over. I need Alexa to win this title. She's not gonna, because really pushing Bayley real hard right now. But I need Alexa to win this title, and I need Alexa versus Nikki to be the feud for the summer on SmackDown with women.
I think Alexa and Nikki is what they're gonna aim, what they're aiming to SummerSlam for. But I wouldn't be shocked if Alexa won this title and they gave Bayley a rematch at the next pay-per-view.
I mean, you can never count Alexa out in a title match because they love to give Alexa the belt.
Facts only. But you said it yourself at the beginning of talking about this match. Bayley's a better chaser, and they know it. And the only way you can give somebody some, not only way, but the easiest way to give somebody some edge is to have them lose the title and that be their precursor to gaining some edge. Bayley needs some edge. And I don't mean outsider's edge. I mean some, like, edge. Some edge.
It works for Becky for the most part for a little while.
Yeah, like, don't steal a popular person's gimmick.
No, that's not what I mean.
I know what you mean.
But like what you were saying, you know, she needs to lose the title. Becky lost the title match. All of a sudden, she snapped and changed her persona and got some edge, and now she's the man who's also defending her title against Lacey Evans in a rematch from Blood Money.
The show before Blood Money. Women can't go to Blood Money shows.
Oh, that's right. The show from before Blood Money. I'm going to go with Lacey in this one because Becky's momentum has come. It has gone. She's lukewarm right now, and they have nothing else to do. So I'm going to go with Lacey.
Can I pass?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do that. Becky's going to win because they've positioned her too high in the scope of the company. And they positioned her too high. She's become a celebrity to them. So, yeah, she's going to win. And Lacey is good. Lacey is really grown quickly and is learning quickly. But she's not championship level. She needs to have a good showing and go back and feud with somebody lower than her. And build back up. And garner some momentum. You know, it's really hard to debut in a title program. And she has given it her all. I would 100% give her all the credit and props in the world. But I think she's a big part to blame for this feud not hitting. Because we know wrestling fans are fickle. Fickle as fuck. We know this. Wrestling fans aren't interested in this because they don't believe, one, that Lacey is good enough, and two, that she deserved it. So, and she's not garnering the type of heel heat that makes you want to watch her get beat.
They're backing themselves into a corner with Becky, though, because you're right. Everything that you said was right. But I would say that Becky, Charlotte, and sometimes Alexa, but not always. And once upon a time, I'd have put Sasha in that category before she fucked off and decided she just wasn't going to work anymore. They have so much more star power than pretty much everybody else that there aren't a lot of people that you can have beat them other than each other.
And
that's problematic. It's problematic when you think about, I can go down the Raw roster and I can think of a lot of credible women on the Raw roster. I'll give one that you and I both love. Our girl Naomi's on that roster. She's a former champion. She's established. Everybody knows who she is. Everybody
sells
knows
merch.
She sells merch. Everybody knows she deserves it. But if her and Becky were in a match against each other right now, ain't no snowball's chance in hell I'm picking Naomi. As presented currently. And that's a problem.
Well, tell me this. On the Raw brand, name me one other woman who's got, and Alexa's the only other answer, but Alexa's fighting for the SmackDown Women's title. But name me one woman who's got any momentum besides Becky.
You're right. Alexa was the only answer. Nia Jax had momentum before she got hurt. But she hurt. Naomi's momentum, never on. They're technically on SmackDown and they...
Tag titles.
Yeah. Naomi wins, but she ain't on. She's not on TV consistently enough.
You know who has the most momentum on as women on the Raw brand? This is going to kill me to say, Dana Brooke, because she's apparently killing it on main events.
Well, she must be used every week on that show. So, like, but that's part of the problem is we don't see the women consistently enough. Something that the wild card thing is made worse because you only highlight the stories that you're going to put on the pay-per-view. And so that's fewer people on the card. And so the women that are single stars, they don't get used very often. And when you're not used very often, nobody has any reason to take you seriously.
And yeah, that needs to be fixed because it's hilarious, the irony. I wouldn't even call it irony, but just the fact that going into WrestleMania 35, the story was the women, how far they had gotten, how hard they had worked, how amazingly they had transformed the idea of what women's wrestling was and could be into what it is. Not becoming the main event, earning the main event, having multiple major matches on a card, multiple title matches, multiple titles, just killing it. And then here we are, 2, maybe even 3 months away from WrestleMania, and, like, the women are almost the afterthought.
Yeah, but it's also, even when it was happening, Rance, we talked about this problem. The more things change, the more they stay the same. They have never gotten past the issue of they only know how to book women's feuds when they're fighting for the championship.
Yep.
They don't consistently show that they care about or know how to properly book mid-card women feuds.
You're absolutely right.
And that's the issue. They're trying something on SmackDown right now with Ember Moon and Mandy Rose.
But that's been all on YouTube.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the problem. Put that shit on the show. Have them have, you know, you don't have to have Ember and Mandy have matches. Have Ember face Sonya. And have Sonya keep beating Ember because Mandy's costing her the matches. Now you got 3 women involved in a feud, and they're all getting TV time, and they're all getting to shine. Because now Sonya looks good because she's getting wins. Mandy looks good as a convincing heel. Ember doesn't look terrible because she's visibly being screwed out of these matches. And all 3 of them now look more credible.
Yep, and the show's better for it.
Yep, but we don't do that. Instead, we only focus on we're focusing on Becky versus Lacey. We're focusing on Bayley versus Alexa and Alexa's side plot with Nikki. and the brewing, who's going to challenge the Iconics? Probably the Sky Pirates. Or whatever the fuck we're calling them.
I mean, if you would have told me that going into SummerSlam, Asuka and Ember Moon weren't being used at all. My God. And I would complain about Where Is Charlotte, but I understand Andrade's had a really rough month. So they've given Andrade and Charlotte some time off.
But that's also okay, though, because Charlotte, I understand we want Charlotte on the show, but because Charlotte is, like, not even oversaturated, overpowering. Charlotte and Roman are on that same level to me as superstars. Yeah. I think Charlotte is a Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins level superstar.
I agree.
And the thing about that is, that means she instantly overshadows and overpowers everybody else. Charlotte is the full-time problem that China was when China became a women's wrestler. When China was wrestling the women and officially became a women's wrestler, you always had a problem of, I can't put anybody in a feud with China because China's a former two-time Intercontinental Champion and she powerbombs the men. Who the fuck's going to believe that any of these women can beat her?
Yeah.
Charlotte at this point is so overpowering as a star that unless you're on that championship level,
Becky, Sasha.
Yeah, unless you're one of those three or four women, literally no one is believable against Charlotte. So if Charlotte doesn't have a high profile feud to be in, I'm okay with her being not used as much because then I'm not reminded that she looms over everybody else.
No, that's a very good point. That's a very good point, and especially her being on a 2-hour show.
Especially with the SmackDown title feud right now being Bayley versus Alexa. If Charlotte was on TV every week and the title feud is Bayley versus Alexa right now, we'd all be like, what is Charlotte doing down there, but this over here?
Especially considering how Charlotte never got a rematch. But
So we
got men's titles to talk about because we could talk about this all night.
We could. But let's do. All right, we're gonna do the Raw title first and then the SmackDown title because of my foreshadowing from before. So
okay,
for the Raw title.
Yes.
We got Mr. Burn It Down, the Universal Champion, Mr. Seth Rollins, versus Big Breakfast, Baron Corbin. Who you got, Brother Rance?
Well, first, we have to let the good people know that it is a special guest referee match.
And Baron gets to pick any referee that he wants, nobody wants to be the referee because Seth has beaten the dog shit out of everyone who's even thought about it.
Which is why the guest referee is a big deal, because they haven't announced anybody yet. So that leads you to believe that it's going to be a big reveal. Now, it's probably not going to be a big reveal because just that's how things work. But the prevailing thought is possibly Brock. I've heard someone say Becky. Like, I wonder who it could be. But it's got to be somebody that Baron can manipulate and that could make Seth not want to beat them down.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Now, if you think Baron Corbin's leaving Tacoma, Washington with the championship, then you a fool. He ain't winning the damn title.
I want him to. I know he's not winning the damn title. But, man, I would just love to see Big Breakfast hit Seth Rollins with that big stack. And maple syrup his ass on out of there.
And man, look, give him a cane rain. Let him lose it Monday.
That's what I'm saying. Let him hit that giant stack one time. Just one time.
Y'all, I know Baron gets so much hate on the internet. But when I tell you, Baron has become the perfect consummate heel. He's so good, but he'll never get credit because he's so good at the things that wrestling fans hate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So good at it.
So the little things, and it helps that he looks like a cocky asshole. Like he has that look about himself, even when he had the long hair, like, and I'm sure some of it is cultivated, obviously, but like, he's got that smug, just want to slap him. Look.
My favorite promo he's ever done was in NXT. But he was talking, he was feuding with, maybe it was Apollo Crews, or it might have been Austin Aries, or what is one of those guys he feuded with early. And he was like, you had to work 15 years to get here. I made a phone call. Like, the dude played 6-7 years in the NFL, is a multiple-time Golden Gloves boxing winner. Like, he could have done anything in the world he wanted. And he literally, like, they called him. Like, he was like, you want to come? All right, cool. So, yeah, he has a right to be cocky because, and from his perspective, kayfabe, of course, and maybe even in real life, they need him. He don't need them.
Facts. All facts. That's what I'm saying, man. So I would absolutely love to see Baron Corbin hit Seth first with that sunny side up and then the big stack.
Dog, the names, bro. Wait till he hits him with the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity.
But anyway, for that 1-2-3, because he's part of a balanced breakfast.
Oh, my God. That's excellent. Who, give me one prediction on the guest referee.
One prediction on the guest referee. All right. Okay. My prediction for the guest referee is Roman.
So, see, I want to pick somebody who, like, everybody who I would normally pick are wrestling that night. So it doesn't really jive. But let me tell you who I think is going to be. People are saying Brock. It doesn't make sense for Baron to want to pick Brock. It's going to be somebody that's going to be groan-inducing.
Oh, I bet. I know who it's going to be because you just said groan-inducing. It's going to be Hunter. Because that would induce a groan.
Bobby Lashley.
Oh, man. Just the mention of his name makes you groan. And it's a shame. Like, it's such a shame, especially to you and I, when I think about when he first got hired back. We had both said, you know, if they can bring in Impact Lashley, as bad as Impact is, they knew how to book Bobby Lashley.
He was great.
They knew how to book him. WWE has never booked Bobby Lashley well. They book him so poorly that you don't even want to see him.
I will say this. You're absolutely right, except for the stretch going into WrestleMania 23 and right after.
Mm-hmm.
He was excellent in those 6 months.
Yep.
He was amazing in those six. He made me believe. That's why they put him right against John Cena immediately after that, because he looked so good.
But you know what? But you know what? Him and Mr. Kennedy are the reason that generation got lost, because those were the first two people that they pulled the plug on in that generation, and they both fizzled big time.
Oh man, the lost generation. But that's the only one that makes sense. Bobby Lashley and Baron. They've been allies. Lashley hasn't been around in a while. Lashley is big enough and strong enough to intimidate Seth. So, you know, we'll see.
You know, speaking of that lost generation, they could probably main event a show, though, because for the WWE title, representing the lost generation, we have It's Gonna Be Me, Dolph Ziggler, versus Kofi Kingston
in
a steel cage match. First of all,
it's old school. I like it.
It does feel old school, but so does everything that Dolph Ziggler's doing. I wish this Dolph Ziggler had been found like 5 years ago.
Man, Dolph has 2 good months every year. Dolph has 2 months every year out of the year where you say, damn, Dolph should be a top star. And then the other 10, he's just like,
He's just there. But like, dude, like these It Should Have Been Me, It's Gonna Be Me promos are so fire. Like this past Tuesday, he was so fire. And then he went on and had that great match with Xavier. And I loved that finish. And here's what I loved about the finish to that match. There are a lot of super kicks you see in wrestling right now. They happen all the fucking time. You know what I love? I love somebody who's willing to take it square in the jaw, two to face, hard camera side. The way Xavier did with his arms in the ropes, just took it square on the chin.
Took it right in the jaw. And Ziggler can throw the hell out of it, too.
Well, Ziggler can throw the hell out of it. He knows how to do it. He knows how to make that smack hit just perfectly. And so, like, I appreciate the fuck out of that ending, because I love when they can take a spot that we see all the time now and make it actually look devastating. That doesn't look nearly as choreographed.
There are only two super kicks in the business right now that, when I see them, make me think the match is over. And one of those guys is retired.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, the Usos are the best tag team in the world to me, but the Usos and the Young Bucks throw so many super kicks in matches, like, they don't matter, dog.
Nope, not at all. I mean, like, I'm not sitting here hating on the super kick party. I'm not saying that they're awful or any of that. No, I'm not disrespecting.
The Bucks are excellent.
They're wonderful. Yo. I'm just saying, like, I don't really care about super kicks because everybody throws them. But that was a really great spot to finish that match. I've really enjoyed this feud. I've really enjoyed the work from Ziggler here. I think Kofi wins this match. I have been on record saying what I think is going to be the case come October. So every month from here to October until it happens, I'm going to make this prediction. Kofi Kingston will retain the title, and then you will hear Brock Lesnar's entrance theme, and this motherfucker going to come out, and he's going to F5 Kofi Kingston, and he's going to be the new WWE champion, because on the first episode of SmackDown on the Fox Network, Brock motherfucking Lesnar is going to have the fucking WWE title. And I'm going to hate it. I'm going to hate every second of it, but it's what I think is going to happen.
I don't even hate the idea. I just hate the fact that you said all that, and then last time we talked about it, you said in his first defense is going to be against Roman. That's when I was just like, oh my God, no. Please, no.
I don't know if it'll be his first defense, but I guarantee you that the main event on the first SmackDown on the Fox Network is going to be Brock versus Roman for the WWE title. I'm going to call it now.
I'm going to
Brock's five dates for the year.
I don't see it, dog. And I'm probably being.
I hope I'm wrong, dude. I hope I'm wrong. I so hope you're right. I can't tell you how much I hope you're right.
Oh my God. All right. So that's stomping grounds, y'all. But that's not the only big thing that's about to happen.
No.
In two, three weeks, the beginning of the most the second most prestigious tournament. Shout out to the bowler in the world. that's a dig.
Shout out to bowler.
G1 Climax, yo. We about to see who's going to main event.
The biggest marathon in wrestling. That's what and G1 is.
You know what the G1 should be changed to? What they should change the name of the G1 to? They should change it to the How Can We Fuck Over Naito Again This Year tournament.
Man, ain't that the truth.
And yes, this is I am a burned and scorned Naito stan.
So oh, ain't just you. Jokes. It ain't just you. It ain't just you. I am right there with you on the bitter Naito fan train.
So for those of you who don't know, if you don't know what the G1 is, it's a round robin tournament that goes on for like a month, and they wrestle
We say like biggest marathon in wrestling, y'all. Like, we're not understating that. They wrestle
12 or so matches, something like that.
Yeah, there are. Hold on. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 8, 9. There's 10 people per block times 2 blocks, so that's 20 people in the tournament total. They wrestle over the course of the month that it runs. It's July 6th, and then it always ends on my birthday every year, 12th of August. So over the course of that month, they will wrestle, if you make it to the finals, you'll wrestle at least 16, 17 matches easily.
And they're going to different cities. Like, the first night's in Dallas, then I gotta fly.
And these
back
aren't
to Tokyo.
And these aren't short matches. Like, the matches, the matches that are part of the main tournament itself are all at least 15 to 20. A lot of them closer to 30. You get 40, 45 as we get later in the tournament. Like, these are not short, easy breezy matches. This is a marathon.
I'm not a big tournament guy, but I have interest in this year. Because of the new names. One of the big issues of New Japan historically, the past 5+ years, has been their over-reliance on the same people.
Well, especially in the G1 climax. Last year, you can go into the archives and you can look up the Outsider's Edge G1 preview from 2018. Mm-hmm. And a good portion of our 2018 preview was you and I talking about, why the fuck is Togi Makabe still on my fucking G1 roster?
Well, speaking of that, they got a storyline with Zack Sabre Jr. putting up his G1 candidacy up against Yoshihashi.
Oh, hell no.
And simultaneously defending his British World Heavyweight title against Yoshihashi. Yoshihashi is a good hand, but come on, bro.
You know what? It makes sense, Rance. It makes sense. I thought I had heard a ticking noise. It must be Zack Sabre time.
Oh. Come over.
Just tap out.
Do you have the list up, or do you want me to name them out?
Oh, yeah, I got it up.
All right, well, we got Block A and Block B, so tell the fine people Block A.
I'll do Block A, you do Block B.
Okay.
So, in Block A, you have got, from Suzuki-gun, Lance Archer. Mm-hmm. From Los Ingobernables de Japón, Evil. You've got the obvious favorite for Block A, all deference, Bad Luck Fale. You've got the man Kota. You got our boy Kenta.
Team Takeover.
Yep. You've got the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada. You've got the Aerial Assassin, Will Ospreay.
Who is simultaneously the junior heavyweight champion.
No, he was the best of the and the best of the Super Junior winner.
Right, but I'm saying he won the title.
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah, Will Ospreay. Zack Sabre time. Zack Sabre Jr. You've got Sonata.
Yes.
And, of course, it's New Japan. So, of course, the ace. Go ace. Hiroshi Tanahashi. So, A Block, a good mix of mostly familiar names. I mean, Kenta's new, but he's not new to Japan at all.
Not to Japan, no.
Like, he's new to the G1, but...
I do like that Lance Archer's getting the heavyweight push now that Harry Smith, D.H. Smith, Davey Boy Smith Jr., whatever, Baby Bulldog, whatever he's going to name himself this week.
Let's just call him Baby Bulldog.
Now that Baby Bulldog is gone from New Japan, Lance Archer is a good hand. And yeah, he'll have some
good matches. The only complaint that I ever had about Lance Archer is that he spits on people and that's gross.
And they made him stop it.
Yes. So, yeah, that's Block A. Going to be a lot of really great matches for Block A. We'll talk more about it after you give us Block B, good brother.
Interesting part about the Block B is listen to all these names that are not normal New Japan names. So we're going to start with former Ring of Honor television champion Jeff Cobb is in the G1 climax. You also have a G1 stalwart and from Chaos, Hiroki Goto.
The Randy Orton of New Japan.
Well, I like the Dolph Ziggler of New Japan better, but yes. Randy Orton actually wins sometimes. And also, speaking of Chaos, you got the Stone Pitbull, Tomohiro Ishii. You have the biggest name in all of wrestling, Jon Moxley, is in the G1 climax.
Not disputed, all facts.
100%. And you have the leader of Los Ingobernables de Japón, and the best guy in all of professional wrestling, you have the Stardust Genius himself.
Tranquilo.
Juice Robinson is in the G1, who's probably going to be...
He's going to
get a lot of really nice babyface shine. And speaking of shine, a guy who's gotten a lot of shine recently for whatever reason why, the opera singer himself, Tai Chi, is in the G1. Probably the most interesting entrant of all the 20 of them is... The dragon himself, Shingo Takagi, is in the G1. Former IWGP heavyweight champion and the only man to ever be given the reins of the Bullet Club. You have Switchblade Jay White. And, you know, the guy who likes to shrug and sell DVDs, Toru Yano, who most people like to call the shooter because apparently he could kill you if he wanted, is in the G1.
I think what's interesting is some of the names that are not in the tournament. Okay. Michael Elgin, not in this tournament. And Big Mike is normally always in the tournament. He very rarely does well, but he's always there.
Mike's gone officially now? He signed an exclusive contract with Impact.
Oh, with Impact?
Impact, yeah.
Oh, he is Canadian. Okay.
He's feuded with Brian Cage. He's supposed to begin fighting for the title. So and that's
fine
for him.
No, that's fine. I'm always surprised when Impact is a first choice unless I remember that they're Canadian.
Yes.
Because Impact is a Canadian company.
100%.
So I thought it was interesting that he wasn't in there. Because Moxley's in it, it's interesting some of the other bigger names from AEW that chose not to participate.
Okay. Like
Kenny, Cody, Paige, and Beretta.
So, if I'm not mistaken, Moxley signed a deal with New Japan before AEW.
This is like a grandfathered deal. Man, that man John Good is a smart man.
Smart. We're going to talk about that after we talk about this because that's kind of controversial. The only two people who have in their contracts that I know of the ability to wrestle New Japan dates are Jericho and Kenny. And Kenny right now, as he should be, is focused on being an executive vice president for a new wrestling company.
No facts. So I'm not shocked. All facts.
Plus, he doesn't have 16, 17 dates to just kill in the summer when they got Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen like 3 weeks apart.
But also, though, some of the other more traditional names that we're used to seeing, like
Makabe,
Gum, some of the other older guys.
Yoshihashi is another one who might be in if he beats Zack Sabre.
Well, you got Yoshihashi. You've got, who's the other old guy with Makabe? Not Hanma.
Hanma is just Great Bash Heel, isn't it?
Yeah, Hanma's Great Bash Heel, but but I'm not talking about he doesn't team with Makabe, but he's that same like generation.
The dude in Chaos, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you. Bring up some other people and we'll just vamp and we'll come up with the name.
Okay, so they picked Fale as the chosen Tongan. They didn't use Tama this year, which, you know, it's always hit or miss whether or not they're going to use him.
For the record, Tama asked not to be in.
Which is good. Tama does better as a tag guy.
And this is kind of, not only is it, it's kayfabe, but it's real life. If you've watched Tama in the tournaments, Tama don't do shit.
He never does.
Goes out there and just kind of bullshits and like destroys shit. So I'm sure they were like, all right, we'll give it to somebody who actually wants to be in here.
Yeah. But I do think it's a good thing, though, that I think it's a good thing that we're seeing some of this newer blood being introduced into the tournament. I think that we're going to get a lot of more interesting matchups. I'm really excited to see what Shingo does in some of these heavyweight matches, because Shingo's just so fucking good. What would you say is the match you would be most looking forward to in the block phase? From each block. So singles match you're most looking forward to from block A, and singles match you're most looking forward to from block B.
Okay, from block A, I'm really interested in seeing the two people who seem to want to kill themselves the most, and I'm not trying to be funny, but if you watch them, you'll see. And that's Kenta versus Kota. They're going to go out there and do something crazy. If you saw the match at Dominion between Naito and Kota, Kenta's finishing move is a knee to the face. So, like...
He invented the GTS.
Yes. He invented the GTS, and he popularized, in modern times, the Burning Hammer. Like, he's out here trying to hurt people. So that's going to be a ridiculously hard-hitting and stiff match.
I'd say for me, for Block A, I'm sticking with Kenta, but I'm excited for Kenta versus Okada.
Yeah, I was going to say that, too. That was going to be my second one.
I'm excited for Kenta versus Okada. Okada doesn't kill himself the way that Kota does, obviously. But just, like, you're talking about two of the biggest names in Japanese wrestling in the last 30 years.
Absolutely.
Going to head-to-head, one-on-one.
It's essentially Noah versus
Japan. Yeah. In a lot of ways, it is Noah versus New Japan. So, like, I am excited as shit for that one. For Block B, because it's one of the only times...
Hold on. Can I tell you another one that's interesting?
Yeah.
I love anytime Okada and Sabre wrestle because it's such a clash of styles.
It's a clash of styles, but it's two people who are so crisp and fluid in everything that they do that even though the styles clash, they clash in a beautiful way.
Absolutely. And they've wrestled a bunch. If you remember, Sabre tapped out Okada in his way to winning the New Japan Cup last year.
So. Honestly, I'm looking – Kenta is the person I'm most excited about in Block A because a lot of his matchups with these people will be people I haven't seen him match up with either ever, or he hasn't matched up with them in years and years and years. And so, like, I'm really excited to see him versus Sabre. I'm really excited to see him versus Sonata.
Him and Tanahashi.
Yeah. And the reason I singled Sonata out specifically, Tanahashi's another one. It's like Noah versus New Japan. The reason I singled out Sonata specifically is because Sonata is one of those people where, again, kind of a Randy Orton comparison in terms of when he's motivated and when Sonata comes to play, there's not many that are funner to watch than Sonata. But it's when so he easy. Don't give a fuck, he just phones that shit in.
But it's so easy for him.
Yeah, effortless. Just effortless. Getting into the B block, I'm going to say the matchup I'm most excited for, because I think it's probably the only time I'll ever get to see it, is Moxley versus Naito.
Oh, my God. I don't think I have enough. We're a PG show. We're not PG, but you know what I mean.
Oh, no. I mean, my fan boner is going to be raging.
I'm about to say, I don't know if I have enough in me to deal with that one.
Fan boner is going to rage.
You know what match I'm actually interested in? Just for the insane level of stiffness that this match will incur. Ishii versus Tagagi is going to be like Godzilla versus Mothra.
And that could be the sleeper match of the tournament.
Yeah.
That could totally be the sleeper match of the tournament. Because think about how many years in a row Ishii always is the guy that you're talking about. He's not in position to win. He's not in position to win. He's not going to win his block. You know he's not going to win his block. But you're looking back, what were the five best matches of the tournament? Well, Ishii versus somebody is somewhere in there.
At least two or three times.
Yep. Oh, so-and-so versus Ishii was amazing.
Would you be shocked if Tagagi was like second or third in his block?
Nope. I wouldn't be at all. I think they're going to push the shit out of Tagagi. Now that they are transitioning him out of junior, and we all knew that the only reason he was in junior in the first place was Hiromu. So now that they've kind of, Hiromu's doing better and they don't have Tagagi like hamstrung into the junior division full time, I think Shingo's going to get kind of a push.
Speaking of that, I do want to mention, you kind of alluded to it, but some of the other names that are signed but aren't in the G1. You got Chase Owens.
Oh, yeah.
I understand why. David Finley, but I think he's hurt.
No, Finley's he must be hurt because Juice is mostly Ring of Honor now, too.
Yeah, no, Juice, you didn't hear the news that Juice said he doesn't want to work for them at all anymore?
No, I didn't hear that. Good.
He's done.
He's too big for them.
Lifeblood is dead. Because it's just Mark Haskins and Bandito, essentially. So, yeah. But he doesn't want to work with them anymore.
Because Ring of Honor is a dead company. I hate to say that.
They're dying. They're not completely dead.
Well, they'll never be completely dead because they're owned by a billion-dollar media conglomerate.
But and they have great matches.
Yeah.
They just don't do business.
Nope.
But... Mikey Nichols, the former Nick Miller from TMDK.
Oh, yeah, I always forget about him.
How about the king of wrestling, Minoru Suzuki?
You know, Minoru has had a couple of times this year where they've not really utilized him, and I wonder if some of that might be that Minoru is finally...
slowing down?
Yeah. He's old. And if anybody's earned the right to decide that they were going to slow it down a little bit.
Maybe it's time. Can I complain about the fact that...
You can always complain, babe.
Will Ospreay has had a great year, an amazing year. But if you were going to go out of your way to put him over all the other juniors and win the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, beating Tagagi in that tournament, and then him going to be Dragon Lee, who never stood a chance, if we're honest.
Nope, never in a million years.
And then you go and put those two guys in the heavyweight tournament? Where's the? So what you're essentially telling me, a guy who doesn't watch New Japan every week, that the juniors suck?
Well, I don't think it's so much that they're trying to tell you that the juniors suck. The problem is that they don't have any, realistically. And the juniors that they do have that are good are close enough to heavyweight that they move them up to heavyweight because they need to replenish those as well.
But this isn't a new problem. We've had this conversation
for years.
We were talking about for years, but when we're especially when we're talking about the junior tag division.
Yeah. For over a year now, we have been having the same exact issue.
Yep.
I don't know if it's just a case of a lot of things all happening at once. So, like, for a while, they had a lot of talent that they lost to first to WWE, and then they just had the big exodus of all the Elite guys, and the Elite took a lot of the other gaijins with them.
Mm-hmm.
To form AEW, so like some of it is a talent exodus.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is the young lions that they had been building up are
Shota
still,
and a couple of the guys, yeah.
Yeah, they're still on excursions and stuff because that's the New Japan model. And so like those guys are still out like learning their thing, so it feels like we're seeing a lot of the same handful of guys rotating around right now because we are.
And then you build, you bring in a bunch of guys like the Australian guys they brought in with Mikey Nichols and LP and Robbie Eagles and a couple other guys like that. And the one thing that has to happen in Japan is the Japanese audience has to connect to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just show up and all of a sudden be put in these big positions if the crowd isn't connecting. That was the issue that Cody had when he was there.
It took him a while. And realistically, that's not a problem that's unique to Japan. It's just a different it's just the way you have to go about it is different in Japan because of the different way that they present the product. In the United States, we see the same issue in reverse. The Joshis have trouble transitioning to the U.S. market because work rate alone isn't going to get you a connection with an American audience.
Mm-hmm.
The gaijins have trouble in Japan because just being charismatic when you don't speak the dominant language of the society don't help you none.
So, yeah, it's cultural, man. Speaking of culture, the one man who's kind of dominating the culture is Jon Moxley right now. And we wanted to kind of get into that before we got out of here. So Jon Moxley is in the G1.
Yep.
Jon Moxley beat Juice Robinson to become the IWGP United States champion.
Yep.
And Jon Moxley was told he couldn't do the G1 show in Dallas.
Yep.
Because AEW has first rights to dates. So, am I going to have to be the one to call out the hypocrisy? Or should I just keep my mouth shut?
No, please call it out. Like, that's what we do here on the show.
If WWE told somebody, you can't use my guy, y'all being the audience, would shit about 14 and a half bricks. But because Cody and Kenny and the Bucks tell, and Tony Khan tell Moxley that he can't work a United States date as the United States champion of another company, a company he actually made a deal with before AEW. It's cool?
It's not. It's not cool. But this is indicative of a bigger problem. New Japan's proposed American expansion is potentially assassinated on arrival by AEW.
Which is why they don't want to work with them. That's why they wanted to keep working with dead ass Ring of Honor.
But that's but what I'm saying is this is a self-fulfilling reinforcement loop because New Japan didn't want to work with AEW. They wanted to work with Ring of Honor because New Japan is the dominant brand in that relationship. And so Ring of Honor is just providing a tool for them to make inroads with American audiences and get their people some exposure and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But they still run the show. as the top promotion. With AEW, that wouldn't have been the case, because if we're talking about the American market, the AEW roster are all of the American stars that New Japan was trying to use.
The American stars.
Yeah, to make those inroads. So, like, it totally makes sense that New Japan would want to work with Ring of Honor over AEW so that they could continue to be the big dog in the partnership. The reason I say it's a self-fulfilling problem is because Ring of Honor, through a collection of circumstances, and it's a lot of different things. Some of it is AEW. Some of it is the natural ebb and flow of market. Some of it is, you know, Impact has kind of figured out its niche. Some of it has...
It's self-inflicted.
Yeah, a lot of it is self-inflicted in terms of the way that they run that company. Ring of Honor is on a steep decline. Steep decline. The reason Juice Robinson and a lot of these people don't want to work with Ring of Honor is because they say it diminishes their credibility. Because working with Ring of Honor diminishes your credibility. Here's a great example. I'll give you two names. When's the last time you thought about either one of these motherfuckers? When's the last time you thought about Marty Scurll or Flip Gordon?
The G1 Supercard.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly my point. You don't think of them at all because Ring of Honor is a non-factor.
By the way, both of them, well, actually, Flip got taken out, but both were scheduled to be in the Best of the Super Juniors.
Yep.
I can't remember one Marty Scurll match.
Nope.
Now, here's the interesting thing. I'm not even mad at AEW for
leveraging intellectual properties. I ain't mad at you.
Here's the issue I have. If you know this about the contract that this young man signed, then why do you give, if you're Gato, if you're the booker, and what's my man's name who runs New Japan now, Hiro May, why would you give John Moxley the United States Championship if you know he can't defend it in America on TV?
I wonder, and this is a legitimate wonder because I don't know.
Okay.
I wonder if they knew that this was going to be the case when they made the decision to give him the title and when they went through with it. I legitimately wonder if they knew when they decided to give him that belt, A, because like you said, he signed the deal with New Japan first. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they knew at the time that this AEW thing was going to be a problem. I wonder if they're even thinking, well, AEW is not even doing their first televised show until months after our one little G1 special in Dallas. And then I wonder if when the night came for Moxley to have the match with Juice, I wonder if that had been talked about yet. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but I also know, again, I'm about consistency and fairness. If WWE made this fuck up, we'd be killing them.
I'm not saying that New Japan deserve to criticize. What I'm saying is, I wonder if this is something that they had even thought about, because New Japan's number one concern when they run their American shows is primarily making sure that all of the talent get into America.
Which has been a problem.
So at least with Moxley, they never had to worry about that because he's a native-born American citizen. He's from Vegas. Like they never had to worry about him getting into country. They weren't going to have to worry about him being able to get into Texas or any of that. Yeah. You know, he white, so like he doesn't. They don't have to worry about like racist shit happening to him.
He white. He Midwestern.
Yeah, like red hair white.
Yeah.
So like they wouldn't have to worry about that. Now, should they have looked at his AEW contract before putting a belt on him? Absolutely. 100%.
It's just as a shame because, well, Juice's championship reign was a death that needed to be died. Because Juice did nothing with that belt in that second reign. After he beat Cody again for the second time, he did nothing, essentially. So it was time for him to move on. But it's just hilarious to me that, well, first and foremost, we don't even know how long he signed or how many dates he's going to have between now and October or September when they start television.
I wouldn't be surprised with Moxley, with New Japan. I wouldn't be surprised if he had only signed through Wrestle Kingdom. as a limited attraction. I could see him wanting to do a G1 climax, and I could see him wanting to have a Wrestle Kingdom match.
Well, so right now he's only done major shows. So he had the title match at the Best of the Super Juniors.
Yep.
He had a match with Shota in the opening match of Dominion.
Yep.
So he wrestled on the second biggest show of the year. He's going to be in the G1. Then I would assume that he's going to, after the G1, he's going to do, what is it, Kizuna Road, is it?
Yeah.
Is that the next
one? Yeah, he'll do like Kizuna Road or what's it called? He'll do one of the second tier.
The November show.
Yeah, the November show.
And then Wrestle Kingdom, which would be 2 days, and it's going to be, man, I can't wait to see how they plan that.
Well, the thing is, I give New Japan credit for how they use part-timers. They tend to make decent, effective use of part-time talent.
That all, except for Chris Jericho.
Yes.
And that's just a personal issue, but yes.
Yes, yes. The issue isn't how they handled Jericho. The issue is that handling Jericho happened at the expense of Naito, and we love him.
Well, yes, that's a big part, but this dude, he's wrestled in, what, 5 matches? They've all been title matches.
Yep.
Like, why did he get a match against Okada?
Because he's Chris Jericho.
That ain't good enough for me, bro.
I don't disagree with you.
If it was at the Road to whatever, all right, cool. He was the main event of the second biggest show of the year. What has he done?
Grew his hair back out. Looks more like Bon Jovi now than he ever did.
Bruh, I mean, that Bon Jovi cosplay is for real.
For real, for real. The older he gets, I'm just like, when did Chris Jericho become John Bon Jovi?
Or did John Bon Jovi become Chris Jericho?
Ooh, asking the hard questions. Asking the hard questions.
Hashtag journalism.
All right, before we close it out, let's give predictions, way too early predictions for the G1 final.
I think we're going to have the same answer.
All right, you give me yours then.
Kota versus Naito.
Oh, see, you thought we were going to have the same answer, but we're not going to have the same answer because I'm going with Kota versus – oh, shit. Hold on. I got to pull the bracket back up. I'm going with Kota versus Switchblade.
I'm about to say he's the only other one who can win that – who realistically could win that block is Switchblade, unless they just shoot Tagaki to the moon. It's either going to be Naito or Switchblade. But I think they're going to run Kota versus Naito one last time. And I love Naito, but it's Kota's year. Kota deserves to main event the Tokyo Dome.
Now that Kota Ibushi has signed a long-term contract with New Japan Pro Wrestling, yes. I fully expect Wrestle Kingdom 2020 to end with Kota Ibushi as the IWGP champion.
Tell me that wouldn't be the biggest fuck you to Kenny Omega.
I don't care if it's a fuck you to Kenny or not, because Kota winning the title is what I need in my life.
It'll be worth it. I mean, think about it. The only way to beat Okada is to have a guy who cares so little about his body that'll do whatever it takes. That's Kota Ibushi.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, yeah. But I wouldn't mind Kota versus Jay White, although it wouldn't be the match that Kota versus Naito would be. But Jay White would, from a storyline perspective, he would, and from a character perspective, he would tear Kota down, and that would be fun to see.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it'll be great. It's gonna be great. G1 is always really fun. This is our obligatory plug to say, if you've never watched a G1, if you're not familiar with New Japan at all, and you need something to kind of let you know what New Japan's about, the G1 is, yeah, the G1 is what I would recommend. If this is your first G1, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. Don't think you're gonna watch every single show, because the young boy can't even watch every single minute of every single show without burning himself out. So, it's a tall ask.
Hey, Kyle.
Yo.
So, I got a question for you.
Yo.
What you doing next Friday?
What am I doing next Friday?
Yeah.
Packing up for my trip to New Orleans.
Did you know that there was a Ring of Honor pay-per-view?
Can't say that it did.
Guess in the world.
Because guess what? I'm not subscribed to anymore.
The Honor Club show? Yep.
Nope. Let it expire.
I just wanted to throw that in there. That they have a made Best in the World is one of their bigger
pay-per-views. One of their biggest shows. That's one of their biggest shows of the year.
That's next Friday. So there you go. And what, here's the amazing thing. You know what the main event is?
No idea, because I don't even know like who the champion is anymore.
Well, still Taven. Taven is still working.
Oh, good.
It's Matt Taven versus Jeff Cobb. What else is Jeff Cobb doing in the month of from June to August?
Oh, he's wrestling in the G1 complex.
So, like, he's starting off real heavy.
In fact, I wouldn't put it past Ring of Honor to put the title on him because he's going to be wrestling in the G1, and they want that belt.
Scene?
Front and center and scene.
I wouldn't doubt it. And as much as we love Taven, both of us do, I don't want to say he's been a lame duck champion, not because of anything he's done, just the company, but it might get a little traction on Jeff Cobb.
Yep. So, yeah. Absolutely. So.
Anything else that we miss? I mean, I know there's
no. Lots of honestly, interesting we got a lot more in depth than I thought we would on the Stomping Ground pay per view.
Can I mention one thing that I wanted to talk about?
Absolutely.
You know I'm an NXT mark. NXT is probably my favorite wrestling in all the world. This goes to prove to you that NXT consistently under Hunter and now Road Dogg and my boy William Regal's leadership is so above and beyond everything else going on in WWE and probably most of wrestling. They have started a breakout tournament with 8 breakout wrestlers who have never been on television before, on WWE television before. Now, when I name these guys, you're going to know who they are. I'm not going to name their change name because I can't find that right now. I'm sure if I took my time, but you wouldn't know who they are. I'm going to name their regular names that everybody knows them by. And I want you to understand how huge this tournament could be because the winner gets a title shot. So of the 8 in this breakout tournament, you have Shane Swerve Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
You have Trevor Lee.
Mm-hmm.
You have Garza Jr. You have DJ Z. You have from the Australian team 3.0, you have Jonah Rock. You have Sam Shaw from Impact.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh my goodness, there's another guy I'm missing.
So many good cruiserweights.
Really good cruiserweights. You have Big Boa, who was one of the first guys signed from China, who's turned out to be really, really good. And, oh my goodness, I can't believe I forgot this other guy, whoever it is. NXT Breakout Tournament. But this is just the most interesting thing to me in the world.
That's a lot of really good, like, really, really solid in-ring performers.
Absolutely. I am pulling up the list now. And, and my God, ACH.
Ah, that was the one.
So ACH's new name is Jordan Miles. Trevor Lee's name now is Cameron Grimes. Shane Strickland's name now is Isaiah Swerve Scott. Sam Shaw's name is Dexter Loomis. Jonah Rock's name is Bronson Reed. Garza Jr. is Angel Garza. And DJ Z is, I actually like this name, it's Joaquin Wild.
All right.
And of course, Big Boa, or just Boa now. But though we've never seen Big Boa, but I've heard good things about him on the Largo Loop. But just for those 7 guys, all 7 of those guys could be the top guy in an indie company.
Absolutely.
And so for them to get the shine, and the story of, I've read the spoilers. So the story of the tournament is that Shane Thorne, formerly from The Mighty or TM61 or The Mighty Don't Kneel, TMDK, is pissed that he's been in that company and he's being put down and passed over by these other guys. So he's going to have issues. And this will bring in the entrance of big homie, friend of the show, Stokely Hathaway.
Yes. Please, more Stokely. More Stokely in my life.
So I just wanted to give give a shout out to that because I think this
let's
is
Let's give a shout out to that tournament in general. That's a great fucking list of names.
And it's a great idea.
Well, and NXT
talk about getting new people on the show.
I was going to say, NXT needs it because, like, we love NXT, but, like, we'll be the first to admit, as much as we love NXT, they need new blood right now.
Well, speaking of new blood, you want to know another guy who just debuted yesterday, this Wednesday?
Mm.
The former Punishment Martinez, the Archer of Infamy, Damian Priest.
Man, I always had a lot of respect for Punishment Martinez. As a mid-card hoss, he brings a real interesting and unique look. He has a cool moveset. Like, as a good mid-card hoss, Punishment is great.
I remember one of the matches he had against Adam Page at one of the Ring of Honor, like, big shows. It might have been... It was the big one, WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, his 6'10" ass dove over the... out of the ring, yep. Over the pole, landed on his head, got up, powerbombed him on the ground, jumped back in the ring. I was like, you're not human.
Dude.
You're not human.
Dude, you know who gets pissed off every time NXT comes out with some shit? You know who gets pissed off? Ring of Honor.
Tony Khan? Oh, but yeah, of course. I was going to say Tony Khan, but yes.
No.
Ring of Honor's hurting.
No, I'm being dead ass serious. If you look at the fucking NXT roster for the last 5 years, where has half of the talent on that roster come from?
The Undisputed Era all are Ring of Honor lifers, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes talk about lifers.
Old school. I'm talking like we could go all the way back to old school NXT.
Oh yeah,
Seth Rollins is Ring of Honor. I'm not even talking Tyler Joe, Black. Dude. Like Joe spent a lot of his time in TNA. Yeah, he was Ring of Honor before then. But I'm talking like you're talking Rollins was Ring of Honor.
The Fall, yeah.
Luke Harper was Ring of Honor.
Brody Lee,
Daniel Bryan. You look at the current stuff, all of Undisputed Era, Punishment, the War Raiders, or the Viking Experience, whatever the fuck they are now. Like,
yeah, but yes, we know what you mean, yes.
But yeah, like, the good entirety, point. You look at the entirety of the NXT roster for the last five Ciampa. Years. Ciampa and Ciampa. Gargano.
Yeah.
Like,
good point.
Candice,
yeah.
Yeah, Candice is the cute point. Part. World's Cutest Tag Team was big.
Yeah, I know. You ever seen that? You know that Wolverine picture where he's like looking at the picture?
Yep.
All sad. That's Kerry Silken or whoever's over them now.
Yep.
Looking at the NXT roster crying.
Looking at his NXT poster just talking about, these are all mine.
And you know who's getting the biggest shine out of all of that?
Mm.
Gabe Sapolsky over there in Evolve.
Yeah, he is.
Because he gets them all back every weekend.
Yep. Yeah, he is. Sends them up. Takes them back on a weekend.
And he probably don't have to pay him because Hunter's probably paying him for that
show. Oh, I'm sure Hunter covers the rate for those guys, for those shows. That's Hunter does. Because Hunter and Gabe are old school buddies anyway.
That's the coolest part about Hunter and what he's done is... He's bringing all his boys with him.
Yep.
The first person he went and got was Regal. Who trained Hunter? Regal did. So, you know, well, I mean, Killer Kowalski did, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when he started, like, Regal took him under his wing. Like, he knows what he's doing.
I mean, but he's always been like that. As much as, like, as many bad things we could say about the Click, and I mean, we could say some bad things about the Click, but, like,
absolutely.
Sean Waltman and Scott Hall are still alive, like, physically breathing.
Yeah.
Because of Hunter.
He's probably one of the biggest reasons, yes. Absolutely. Paige, you got to throw Paige in there too, but yes.
But yeah.
Hunter was always the only one of the four, of the five who was clean.
Well, not only was the only one who's clean, but in the case of like Sean especially, I think Hunter was the driving force behind Sean going to rehab two or three times.
Waltman or Michaels or both?
Waltman, actually, but yes, Michaels too, but Waltman was who I was specifically thinking of. Like,
he helped save Sean's life.
Two or three times where Waltman talks about going into rehab, and it was like, why did he go? Because Hunter called him and was like, motherfucker, you're going to rehab. We're going to pay for it. You're going to rehab.
That's real friends. And I really hope when we turn 50 and 60, that me, you, Carl, Ricky, Clyde.
I hope we don't have to call each other to say we're sending you to rehab.
Well, look, I'd rather it be you guys than the popos.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, I hope when we're 50, I don't have to call you up and be like, yo, Rance, I'm sending you to rehab. You leave on Thursday. You're booked at an 8 o'clock flight.
Well, we appreciate you guys listening. We gave you a lot of stuff. I wanted to show some love to that NXT breakout tournament. And, of course, the best stable in wrestling just debuted this Wednesday. And that's the Imperium stable, a.k.a. the new Ringkampf. So check out NXT UK. All of you complaining about Raw and SmackDown and how bad it is or how much it gets on your nerves, whatever it is, NXT UK and 205 are so diverse and give you everything you say you want and you don't watch. Go watch it. It's only $9.99. Free for
it's
first month.
It's cheaper than Uncle Dave's shit rag, y'all.
Oh, fuck Dave.
It's cheaper than his shit rag.
Because apparently Dave is going back on judging WWE by how many pay-per-view buys they get. They've had a network for five years, dog.
Talking about pay-per-view buys?
Anyway, our brother Carl, you can find him, even though he's in Estonia right now, at Outside
of Curry. Still on Twitter, y'all. He's got internet out there. Hashtag World Tour.
I'm at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y's in Mysterio, C-A-S-H as in dollar signs. The show is at Outsiders Edge, C-S, so give us a follow.
I am at Dr. Schmores.
Yes. And, of course, we're a part of the Chair Shot Network at thechairshot.com.
Where you always use your head.
Take it away, my brother.
We promise to get back on a more consistent recording schedule. We're just increasingly older men with some complicated lives, and sometimes our lives take over and we don't record every week like we're supposed to. Sometimes our computer equipment doesn't cooperate and we record a whole show and realize we gotta find a way to retroactively fuck around with audio.
Facts.
Sometimes we record the show and we realize about halfway through that we're super unstructured and we're just going on lots of tangents. But you know what?
Double facts.
It's all right, because at the end of the day, y'all, we are just some young men out here doing the best that we can to make it in this world. And we're out here following our dreams. And you have got to respect that. Because if you don't, y'all, I can promise you, we just don't give a fuck.
Fuck 'em.
Thanks for listening, y'all. We'll catch you next time.